Len, this is the week. The PGA Tour is back at Bay Hill, Arnie's place. And as you and I have discussed in the past, things may be a little different, especially with, unfortunately, the King Palmer no longer with us. And it appears that they are really toughening up the golf course with some extremely deep rough this week. I know you're headed to Bay Hill, and let's give some thought here to what we could see as the API, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, tees off.
The two little disappointing things, a couple negative things first. They, you know, it was a very strange situation with Bryson DeChambeau. He was going to be defending a title. There's a strange story around it. Anyway, he had entered, and then before the day was out, he withdrew. So he won't be there. And Jason Day was a late withdrawal. So, you know, those are two really big name players that would be certainly fitting for the field there. I think the growth of the rough is an interesting concept. I was at a media day this week for the Valspar Invitational at Innisbrook, which would be 2 weeks after the API, and the rough there was much thicker than I had recalled it from the last times I visited there, and I've been there quite a few times. You know, maybe that's a new thing here. Maybe we're going to get the Florida courses with much thicker rough. I didn't notice it at the Honda Classic, and I'll be at the Arnold Palmer Invitational this weekend. So it'll be interesting to see just where they're going with that. That tournament, I think, is really, you know, they've tried to prop it up with good prize money and making it a more attractive tournament, trying to overcome the loss of Arnold being there on site, which really was the key to that whole resort's success. But I still think it needs something. It needs more than it. You know, he was a big guy. He was a tough loss, and not just as a person, but for his tournament and his resort. I think that they both suffered, a lot in their popularity without him around. So this is going to be an interesting weekend for me to have some thoughts on Bay Hill and on the tournament itself. We're looking forward to going there.
Well, and one way that they could really increase Arnold Palmer's presence is to have a massive, shall we say, Arnold Palmer stand. And maybe the Arnold Palmers need to be in all of the water coolers on the tee boxes for the players. Cans of Arnold Palmer, the drink, the lemonade iced tea mix that Arnold really made so famous over the years. And you would have to think they should do that. If I'm Arnold Palmer, I would, the company that does that, I would be definitely having a major Arnold Palmer stand there so that everybody could come by and have themselves an Arnold Palmer during Arnold Palmer week. It'd be a great way to toast Arnie, I would have to believe. And I think a lot of people would really enjoy it. But, in spite of the deep rough, and you know, Len, that raises the question. You know, some of these tournaments now are, it seems like they're making the rough almost U.S. Open or PGA-like. And you have to wonder if some of the players might actually enjoy that. I mean, we're not that far off from the season of majors. And, you know, if you want to start playing in some tournaments and trying to prime your game for the season of majors and even what they might see at the Players' Championship a week from now, having a few tour events that are set up a little bit more like major championships might actually be a good thing for the players.
Interesting concept there, that's for sure. Of course, the players, you know, you never hear them, I don't think, complain about a course being too easy or whatever. I mean, there's a whole lot of different factors that make things appealing to them. I think the prize money more than anything else. The one thing that I think that the danger, and I've seen this at a few tournaments that tried to do that. There was trouble locating the ball, and it's slowing down play if the rough and the hazards are too much. I'll get a little overboard. I mean, the Honda is considered one of the more difficult courses on the tour. I think it was the third most difficult statistically last year. They still shoot very much under par, very much good numbers. You see their skill on display, but I think that you have to keep a a happy pace of play, even for those guys. And they're not all necessarily that fast of players. Sometimes I think a real thick, rough situation or making the course as hard as they can, it won't affect the players or who wins. They all got to play the same thing. But a pace of play situation, and you want a tournament that a course layup that gives them a chance to show off how good they are. It makes it more entertaining.
Well, it'll be interesting how it all shakes out, and hopefully it's a great week at Bay Hill, and we have some great golf to watch, and I hope it works out great since you'll be there seeing it in person. Len, also this week down in Florida in your neck of the woods, there was a press conference on Monday morning. John Deere Classic board member and past champion and also British Open and Masters champion Zach Johnson named Ryder Cup captain for 2023 at the Marco Simone golf course in Italy. And Golf Digest keeps raising this issue. Was Zach Johnson supposed to be the captain? They have suggested that Phil Mickelson was going to be the captain, but Mickelson's latest comments that have got him in hot water and also seen him lose several sponsors, if not almost all of his sponsors, was the reason that Zach Johnson was pushed up into the slot this year. My opinion is that I think that's not the case. I believe that the PGA of America would love to have Phil as the captain at Bethpage, where he was so loved by the galleries during the two U.S. Opens there. But anyway, it's an interesting topic to kick around if Zach Johnson actually was a last-minute replacement on this 2023 Ryder Cup for Phil Mickelson.
I think you're exactly right on that one. I don't think that Phil was going to be a candidate for the Ryder Cup this year. I think that Zach is a fine choice. I think he has a couple of Masters, and he's been a good British. So he's plenty good of enough player. He's certainly earned it by being a Ryder Cup player for 5 years and for being a vice captain for 2 years. He's assistant captain. He merits it. He's liked by the players. They're coming off a big win. Nothing wrong with having Zach there. And I think that Mickelson, if he indeed gets tapped now after this last incident, and he's lost all these sponsors, he's not his he's in a peculiar place in life right now. I think he'd be a great captain for the Ryder Cup at Bethpage. I think he'd be a real focal point there because of his popularity, whether he's still in the middle of a controversy or not. I think he'd be a good captain for Bethpage.
Last weekend was the Chicago Golf Show, the virtual version of the Chicago Golf Show. And again, this year's in-person event at the Donald Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont was canceled for the second straight year. And people are asking, how is it that the two golf shows coming up in a few weeks in Wisconsin, in both Milwaukee and Madison, are still being held? The famed large Novi show in Michigan outside of Detroit is being held. I believe there was a golf show in Ohio, maybe Toledo, that was held. And people are asking, why is it that only the Chicago show is getting canceled? Even the Tinley Park show in the South Suburbs took place in person again this year. And, you know, it goes back to what we touched on briefly last week. Perhaps they just didn't sell enough boots to justify the cost of putting on the show. But again, it seems like many of the other shows are happening in person. And, you know, you have to question whether or not it's really worth doing these virtual type things. We saw last year the PGA show that had previously drawn about 42,000 people. The previous year had less than 12,000 take part in the virtual event. And we've seen press releases that have suggested that there was 20,000 people out at the show the last time it was held in person over the 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the numbers said less than 6,000 took part. Even with golf, you know, a lot of people playing right now and a lot of really nice stuff that the CDGA virtual show gave away, that less than 6,000 people participated in it. And I got to believe going forward that maybe the time has come to stop these virtual events because they just don't have the attraction for the people.
Absolutely. You can't beat the real thing. I mean, these virtual things. I think probably that my suspicion is pretty based on some research too, that they didn't get enough booths, and you know that it just didn't merit putting it on. But that's a shame, because that show was a popular attraction in Chicago for over 30 years. So I think that I think golf shows are going to have to change the way they did business before the pandemic, because I think we saw that with the PGA merchandise show. I think they did a fine job just having a show with fewer people, with fewer exhibitors, but it's still, they're still, they still have a use. They still have a value to the player and to the industry itself. So I think that maybe a second look at how do we put these things on, make it different than it was, make it more attractive. I don't have all the answers as to how to do that. I think that maybe a date, maybe in the case of Chicago, I always thought it should be a little bit later than it was, just a little closer to maybe to tantalize people with how the weather is outside, even before the courses are really up for taking on players. But it's a shame that Chicago couldn't be held, because that's been a fixture so many years. It's a winter attraction for golfers, of all types, who planned around that. So hopefully everything will be straightened out in another year, and we'll be back to business as usual to some degree.
One thought that I kicked around with our partner, Tim Cronin at the Illinois Golfer, is Tim said he remembered going out to the Chicago Golf Show a couple of times when it was held at Harper College in Palatine. And I know one thing, there are people that are always scrambling to get out of that area because of the traffic, especially on Friday. And there's, a lot of the golf shows, Tinley Park and some of the other places, you don't pay, or you pay a couple of bucks to park the car, and Rosemont's a little bit different. And Tim suggested that there are several venues, be it junior colleges, be it Harper College, be it the Convention Center at the Renaissance Hotel in Schaumburg, the Sears Center, that maybe there's some suburban locations a little further removed from Rosemont and Chicago where you might have a place where you could do business a little cheaper and also lower the price of parking, and it might be a win-win situation for everybody involved. So I'm not sure what Tom Corcoran, Corcoran Expositions, the show owner, will do next year. All I can say at this time is I really do hope that it's a show that resumes in person, wherever it is they decide to hold it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think, I brought about a date change thing. I think that a site change would be a good one as well. I think we could go. I remember the show at Arlington Park that was held there for a while. I think a couple of years, if I'm not mistaken. That would be, there's a lot of other locations a little further outside of the Chicago area that would be, I can think of a few that would really be good. The show might look smaller, not holding it in a big expo, but I think those things have to be investigated, because it can't, it's when you had, this was not a year to cancel a golf show. This was a year to hold one live. And I'm sure they had reasons for not holding it this year, but Chicago's got to have a golf show, a good golf show. It's got to be straightened out in time for next year.
Agree. And if anybody can put on a really good golf show, it's definitely Tom Corcoran and his staff at Corcoran X Exhibitions. Len Zeeb, our own backyard here in between my estate and your former estate, Nickel Knoll Park, the golf course sometimes known as Peyton's Hill in honor of the late, great Bear running back Walter Payton. Mike Benkuski, the architect, as a reached out to me and announced he finally got the green light to go ahead and start moving forward on a planned renovation of our little par 3 course up there. And hopefully not only do the golf holes get a little better, but just the way the park district sort of sells it, market it, and rebrands the course to get some more people up there. And it would be great to have a course named after Walter Payton in Arlington Heights, especially if a few years from now the Chicago Bears actually do move to Arlington Heights and the Arlington Park racetrack area.
I always thought it should be named Peyton Memorial. I mean, the park itself can keep its name of Nickel Knoll. I mean, it's got a walking, running trail. It's got a baseball field. The park name is okay. But I think a Peyton Memorial would be something more that brought Walter's presence, his name, into the project. I think would help it a lot. And I know that Mike Benteschi has some ideas to take it further when he does some work on the course. But with the Bears coming, that should be tied in with a lot of activities, football related over there. I mean, outings, you know, a lot of things just relate relative to the Bears. The location couldn't be better. It should be an exciting time for Nickel Knoll. And of course, you and I know how much fun we've had there over the years. I think people are going to really find that in the spotlight more if the Bears complete their move.
Len, on Monday, the media gets a chance to meet our local area winners that have earned themselves a spot in the finals of Drive, Chip, and Putt at Augusta National. And I believe we have five area junior golfers that are going to get to go to Augusta, Georgia in a little more than a month to compete. And always an exciting time of the year. We're getting close to the Masters, but it's also nice to see Illinois turn out several kids that have advanced all the way to the national championship finals at the home of the Masters.
Yeah, that's a great event. I covered that event at Augusta about 2 or 3 years ago and got to know the people there. I think it's a great idea that the Illinois PGA in Medina is having kind of a preview for the Chicago kids that are going. It's really a great thrill for those kids to be there. And, it's, you know, you can see it on TV. It was really a great move on Augusta National's part to take on the finals of the event. I mean, the PGA Tour players, a few of them have always come over and watched it. It added a lot to the Masters, I thought. And so did the Augusta National Women's Amateur, which we're going to see for the third time this year. It all looks good, and I think it's great that the media attention is also spread out over the local qualifiers before they get there. So a win-win for everybody.
Len, more good news is that it seems like we do have a handful of local area players that are competing on various professional tours. And we'll start with the Korn Ferry Tour. Reigning Illinois Open champion TK Kelly has been playing on the tour along with Brad Hopfinger and also Vince India. Of course, those two also former Illinois Open champions. And a couple of tough breaks for TK. He's last couple weeks he has been under par after 36 holes, played some good golf, but has missed the cut by one shot 2 weeks in a row out there on the tour. And, you know, that's it's tough to play well. It's tough to shoot under par and find out you're not getting a check and you don't get to play for the weekend.
TK had a good tournament early on in the season, which was encouraging. And I hooked up with the Korn Ferry Tour when they were playing here in at Lakewood National, and I spent some time with Vince India there. You know, I'm pulling for Vince especially because he's come so close to cracking the PGA Tour in recent years, and he's been a loyal member of the Korn Ferry Tour. But he's on the brink now, where it's kind of a make it or break it thing for Vince pretty soon, and I hope this is the year for him. The Korn Ferry Tour, it doesn't seem to have quite as many players from our area as it did last year. I haven't seen Andy Pope's name on any of the... he was the one who had played out there for the longest period of time. Patrick Flavin, though, has been trying to go through some of the qualifying rounds. He's not a regular member of that circuit, but I think we're going to see him out there pretty soon. So, we've got, that's the first tour event in Chicago this year, is the newly named tournament that was once the Rust-Oleum and once the Evans Scholars Invitational. It'll be coming in May, I believe, to the Glen Club. So people all get a chance to go see that.
The NV5 tournament, and also I believe our friend Nick Hardy and Patrick Flavin are both in Puerto Rico this week playing. So We hope that they make some birdies and have a great week. And speaking of Nick Hardy, Nick and Doug Gim, fortunately, I believe they've had more missed cuts this year than they'd like to remember.
Yeah, they certainly have. They Nick played well in the fall, and Doug on the you know, he did keep his card for after his rookie season, so he that's a positive. That's not always the easiest thing to do for a first year player, because you got to get enough starts to earn enough money to stay out there, and Doug did. They haven't had the greatest, neither one of those two have had the greatest start in 2022. So they're going to have to, there's a lot of tournaments left. They can still do well, but, they're going to have to start getting in gear pretty soon.
Len, what sounds like a fun event that I've never had the chance to participate in, and you and I talked about this a few times in years past, but the Foxford Hills up in Cary is having their golf night on May 14th, golf at night. So come play under the stars. It always sounds like a great concept to go out there, and when you know that it's getting dark at, say, 7:30 and your tee time's at 7 o'clock at night, to go out there and play under the stars.
You know, I did that one time. It was a lark. It was I couldn't quite envision how that could be done, but they I had heard of night golf played in some of the other areas, and it was a lark. It was a fun thing to do. If I was around there, wherever they were going to hold that, I'd want to do it again. I think people have a lot of good laughs out of it.
Len, one interesting thing that we haven't covered is while I was on my trip, I got a chance to play what I'm going to call Jemsek Golf South. And the owners of Cog Hill and the family that owns St. Andrews and runs Pine Meadow, they also have a golf course just south of Atlanta in Noonan, Georgia. And I went down there, and unfortunately, there was a couple holes that were stressed from some flooding, because they had a stretch where they got 14, 15 inches of rain in 48 hours, and that'll take a toll on any golf course. I thought the golf course was really good, and I talked to golf course management down there, and they couldn't be happier. They said that Frank Jemsek and Catherine Jemsek had given them the green light to really spend some money on the golf course and fix up a few of the troubled spots. But it's a really good layout, and I'm anxious to see what they're going to do. I'd look forward to going back and playing it on a day warmer than 55 degrees. But I think any of our Chicago golfers that play Cog Hill or Pine Meadow or St. Andrews, if you're in the Atlanta area, definitely head over to Summer Grove, just about a 30 to 40 minute drive south of downtown Atlanta.
Yeah, I paid a visit to Summer Grove a few years back, and I think that it was a day that couldn't play, but I wanted to see just what the Jemseks were doing over there, because, you know, they've been the leaders of Chicago golf for years and years and years, and it's interesting that they were just kind of getting started with the project over there, but it looked like it was going to be pretty good. And I know that the weather, though, that they've had in Atlanta of late this year, it's been devastating for golf there. So I think that maybe, you know, some work on the course there was not only necessary because of the bad weather, all the rain they've had, it has been extraordinary. Of course, definitely, I agree with you, definitely a place to visit. If you're coming from Chicago out there, you've got another Jemsek course that you ought to visit.
Len, you and I have participated in various media days for a long time here in the Chicago area. And, you know, we kind of have our expectations of what those days should be. And for many years, the defending champ would come in person instead of doing some kind of a video Zoom call or being on a conference call or on a speaker phone or something like that. And, you know, it was always fun to get out and really meet with all the tournament officials, talk to the defending champ in person, get out and play some golf, take a look at how the championship course is going to get set up that year for the tournament, and, you know, maybe compete for a few contests and things while we were out there. And I know since you've moved to Florida, you haven't always seen that out of some of the events, but you called it an old-fashioned media day over at Innisbrook on Monday, and yesterday, some of what they did was making its way out to social media, and I've got to know, where you there for the infamous let's tee off and hit a balloon full of paint tied in with Valspar and their paint products, and they're sort of decorating a canvas that it sounds like will be a painting auctioned off during tournament week?
Yeah, that was an interesting thing to watch. I was there and had to play Copperhead, which is always a treat. But they had Rondé Barber, a football star, football player from with some local connections here in the Florida area. And, of course, they had the defending champion, Burns. He was there. And they had three celebrities. Oh, long driver, the long drive guy, Maurice Allen. They hit, it was funny. They hit drivers or whatever club they wanted from only about 20 yards away. And they had these balloons stacked up on a rope. And the idea of it, they came in different colors. The idea of it was the player who would win, who had the last balloon in his eyes standing. And of course, nobody did it because Burns hit the last shot and broke two balloons, including his own, at the same time. So the paint spread out, made for a nice painting that will be auctioned off at the tournament. That tournament is very innovative with its promotion. It was a great media day, much better than any media day I've been to since leaving Chicago. They had the defending champion interviewed. They had a big breakfast meeting. They had fun stuff, and they had a big turnout. They mixed you in with the Copperheads, which is their fundraising organizational supporting arm, and it was just a great day. But they bill that tournament as the most colorful tournament on the PGA Tour because of all the paint projects that are on display, artwork projects that are all over the golf course. But it was a real fun day, and that event with hitting the golf, seeing these guys hit golf balls into balloons, and they missed them way more than they hit them. Made for a real treat to watch.
Well, I'm sure it was. Sorry we missed that. And I do want to double back here for a second. The NV5, the Western Golf Association Corn Ferry event that's going to be held at the Glen Club on the last week of May. Tickets are now on sale today. So, folks, you're anxious to get out in person, go to the Glen Club and see some professional golf. Tickets on sale for the NV5 Championship over at the Glen Club Memorial Day weekend. And with that, Len, we're going to wrap up this week's edition of Zeman Spears Volume 5, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.